I'm Brittany Harden-Tengue, a manager with KPMG, and I am fascinated by the practice of transfer pricing and its impact on the global market. Join me each episode as I explore the transfer pricing world with specialists who will explain the ins and outs of this niche practice where tax meets economics.
Welcome to Exploring Transfer Pricing. In today's very special episode, we're taking a deep dive into the OECD's International Compliance Assurance Program, or ICAP. ICAP is a voluntary program that allows multinational enterprise groups and tax administrations to work together in a cooperative risk assessment and assurance process. We'll be looking at this from two unique perspectives, that of a multinational corporation and that of a tax authority. And if you haven't heard of ICAP before, here's what you need to know. ICAP is a collaborative program developed by the OECD that allows tax authorities from multiple countries to review multinational companies' tax arrangements at the same time. The goal? To help companies achieve what we call practical certainty, meaning confidence that their tax positions are accepted by the countries involved, and to reduce the risk of costly tax disputes. And as we'll discuss, ICAP is designed to deliver these outcomes on a relatively quick basis. And so we have two fantastic guests to guide us through this complex topic.
Welcoming Doug O'Donnell, our former IRS Deputy Commissioner and former Acting Commissioner, who was instrumental in the development of ICAP. So welcome, Doug.
Thank you.
And then we have Eric Skarstad, a Transfer Pricing Managing Director, who has firsthand experience in the ICAP program as the head of Transfer Pricing, and not one, but two Fortune 100 companies. So welcome, Eric. We're very happy you're here as part of our Transfer Pricing team.
Yep. Thanks, Brittany.
And so we'll dive right in. So looking first to the origins and objectives of ICAP, Doug, I'm so curious to hear from your perspective. How did this come about?
Yeah, I'll start off as I often do, Brittany, with a little bit of context through a couple of different stories. Following BEPS 1.0, there was a lot of work across the globe for tax administrations and taxpayers to implement the various actions that were part of the package. There were also a number of opportunities to put the information that was coming in from some of the actions to effective use. And we were really looking at it from the government perspective in coming up with thoughts around multilateral approaches and also working in a multilateral setting to develop what the effective use could be. So a lot more countries had access to it. But a question remained as to how else could we use this information? Is there some way to be it to be beneficial in some way to tax administrations and to taxpayers alike? And there was this consideration to the BEPS Action 14, which was widely considered to be the only action that was focused on a business-friendly approach in that entire action plan. And the idea for Action 14, in just a few words, is to prevent disputes and to the extent that they do arise, to try to resolve them as quickly and effectively as possible. And I was working closely with the FTA Secretariat, and we came up with this notion that we should think about using a program or modeling a program in a global environment that could be used multilaterally that followed the thinking behind the IRS's compliance assurance program. So something where you're near in time to filing, you've got a risk assessment approach. And so we began working on a project that had sort of at the basic level, the following objectives, which would be to bring multiple tax administrators together with one large M&E required to file the action 13 country by country reports and work to evaluate the risk that was present in their operations in those reports. And the objective would be, in my view, in the view of most that were participating in, to try to get to a place where the tax administrators could view the filing position of that taxpayer with respect to transfer pricing and PE. I keep saying that, but it's important. It is limited. As low risk, and so that there would not be any additional work required by the tax administrations or the taxpayer with respect to those transactions. To the extent that that was not possible, so we couldn't get to low risk, but there was some risk, the thinking was that there'd be a variety of treatments that could come out of that. For example, there'd be a discussion with the taxpayer. Some of us are concerned with the filing position on this item. Could you change it going forward? Just, you know, discussion, no real effort involved beyond that. And expectation would be a conversation with the taxpayer. They'd either agree or not, but typically the expectation was they would. Or that it the risk was of a sort that there was an expectation that an APA, it could be bilateral, it could be multilateral, it could be unilateral, I suppose, would be pursued to sort of lock down whatever concern that there was. And to the extent that there was a belief that a deeper dive was necessary and an audit would have to be conducted, there would be a joint or multilateral audit. The expectation was that there would not be audits coming out of it, not because we didn't expect that there would be that type of risk present. We knew there could be, but we were hopeful that the outcome could be some other lighter touch that did not require that level of dive. And so that's kind of what the context was. That's the sort of origin story, and what the broad parameters of the program expectation were to get together, to use that information, to understand risk, and to work to mitigate the concerns that the tax administrations had by either better understanding the taxpayers' operations or affecting some type of a change that got people comfortable with the reporting.
That's excellent. Do you want to walk us through the ICAP process?
The really early days of it, and you talk about tax administrations coming together, but we put this idea to the BIOC, and they were more supportive of it than I could have imagined. We ended up pulling together a small group of tax administration subject matter experts. And when I say small, it was small. There was only a handful of countries that were participating in the development of the program. And part of that was we were trying to keep it close and work through and develop a pilot that we could roll out, not completely under the radar, but we really weren't sure how this was going to work and how complicated it was going to be, how heavy it was going to be. And the first challenge was to get taxpayers to participate. And so there was a lot of conversations around, you know, how do we do that? How do we make sure people are going to have confidence? Where's the trust there? I mean, you talk about eliminating friction. There's a trust aspect to this that I'm diving into something that's new, and I'm not just dealing with one tax administration. I'm dealing with several. And so that first step of inviting and then getting companies to agree to participate, that was significant. But once we got beyond that, it was tax administrations having requested information, reviewing the information, agreeing on a meeting spot, which typically was going to be close to the headquarters of the companies that were participating so that they could make available senior business leaders in the company. Because everyone agreed that if we were going to do this rapidly, effectively, it was going to be helpful to have voices from the taxpayer who really understood the drivers of value in the company and were there to answer questions live with the tax administrations based on the information they had and the concerns that they had as well. And so that was sort of the sort of big picture start of it. A OECD guide was developed that is available at their website and provides a really comprehensive look at the program for anyone that's interested in a lot of detail.
Thanks, Doug. Eric, I'd love for you to come in here and share how the ICAP process worked from your perspective when you led it as a taxpayer. Could you walk us through what it was like from the company's perspective, how you approached participating, and what considerations were top of mind for you and your team?
I participated in the second beta version of ICAP. And, you know, a couple of considerations that I think are important with respect to process. One relates to selection of countries that would be part of the ICAP process. And the second would be the selection of the transactions that would be part of ICAP. And in both cases, it was important to us as the taxpayer to have input on both of those, right? So from my perspective, we were asked to provide a list of countries that we would potentially want to have part of our ICAP team. Some countries were interested, others were not, right? And then similarly, with respect to transactions, we teed up 50, maybe 100 transactions, and had, again, a back and forth about what ought to be included, what not, what shouldn't be included. For example, transactions that were already covered or were by APAs or were in process with APAs, those were excluded, for example. And Doug, I don't know if you want to add any color on the other side here.
The point you just made on APA transactions being covered and not really being subject to part of the look, I think that that's a nod to the importance of having an effective transfer pricing strategy on the part of a taxpayer, and also having an APA network where you've got a lot of, potentially a lot of exposure. But certainly a lot of volume of activity where you want to make sure that that treatment by two or more countries is kind of locked down. That's super helpful. I do think, Eric, to your point, a big part of what was being requested in more detail was when the tax administrations would start talking to one another about the things that they wanted to look at more closely. It was very clear to us, and it wasn't a shock because of our experience in MAP and in APAs, but there are views on materiality and on certain transactions risk level that is different from country to country in ways that ultimately did surprise me. I thought there was going to be more of a common view as to which transactions were of most concern, but that was not necessarily correct. And of course, materiality always comes in. And I think the point here to make is that resulted in different amounts of documentation or different types of documentation being requested, so that up front we would have a look at some of these items and be able to have a more rational discussion with the taxpayers.
You know, that's so fascinating, because it probably was not a surprise to you, Eric, at all, of the differing opinions of tax authorities around the world. So again, it's through a unique process like this that brings all of these different perspectives together. You spoke about that leap of faith that is required. So Eric, I'd love to hear more about some of your real world experiences, and then what gave you the confidence to say, okay, yep, let's open up the doors and let all these different tax administrations in?
Right. So it's a risk assessment. It involves multiple jurisdictions all involved at the same time, having live conversations, right? So many companies may perceive this to be superior to unilateral conversations, right? We perceived it to be a cost-effective way of getting, not legal certainty, but a high degree of certainty on the risk level of our transactions, right? So it's clearly not a substitute for an APA, but it is, it's pretty darn good. And that's kind of the assessment that we made. And to your point, to the extent that you have transactions and those transactions are not determined to be low risk for whatever reason, you've got a jump start on an advanced pricing agreement or some other way of approaching it proactively, right? Because I think a common feature of companies that may be interested is that they're proactively seeking certainty, trying to do it as quickly and at the lowest level that they can, right? Pacing was something that was extremely appealing to us. Our experience was in the 12 to 18 month window that is talked about in the handbook. And when you compare that to a bilateral APA, that looks very, very quick. Same thing. There's a lot more variability, as on audit, but it also compares favorably there. A point that relates to the multilateral nature, the ICAP dialogues occur under treaty and local provisions, right? So the conversations are live, right? As opposed to taking an IDR and passing it over the fence. It's much more efficient to do that way, and that was appealing. It's clear, to participate in ICAP, you need to devote some time and resources. We did not expect it to be more than an APA, and that was certainly how it bore out for us. Relative to an audit, it's going to vary relative to the audit. But I think fundamentally, ICAP is not an examination process, so it's a very different animal for that perspective.
In my role at the time this was developed, I was the commissioner of the Large Business Division. I was also the United States Competent Authority. I was responsible for MAP forums. we felt like this was a really good opportunity. We just had recalibrated the compliance assurance program, CAP, in the IRS in 2018. And so these things were kind of dovetailing. A lot of that thinking was going together. We were trying to figure out how to reduce the burden of some of these audits that come up, especially in transfer pricing. As everyone knows, transfer pricing and research credit are huge consumers of time and effort on the part of tax administrations and taxpayers. And so we're looking for a different way to approach it, the multilateral setting, resolving a lot of issues more quickly, to reduce the number of cases coming in the MAP. Frankly, I mean, there are a lot of cases that were coming in that we thought this might elevate trust and confidence and reduce that inventory flow. You need a lot of taxpayers for that to happen. So that's a bit more of a complicated, more of a stretch goal. And then finally, to just, again, be able to solve big problems in a manner that is a bit different than we have tried before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you've got to start somewhere in this, like you said, lofty goals, but being able to find a way to begin to build, like you said, build out that trust and ultimately get to a point where you're making things more efficient. All in all, it sounds like the program has gone pretty well. Eric, I'm curious what, from your perspective, were some of the challenges and considerations?
Sure. Yeah. Let me talk a little bit about things that I think are important to have a successful experience in ICAP, right? And so I think taxpayers need to be committed to tax certainty in a proactive fashion, and they should be comfortable with a high degree of transparency, right? And so I think that has to be kind of item number one. There's a lot of material that you need to produce as a taxpayer to participate in ICAP, you know, things like global master file, country by country reporting, local files, intercompany contracts, statutory financials, those kinds of things, right? And so many companies have those things on hand, and it would be very important to be able to deliver those in a quick fashion. So it's the kind of thing where you need to, you know, you can't cram for this. You need to have been pretty diligent about your work so that you can produce it quickly and help the project stay on the 12 to 18 month time horizon. And I think just a point that I want to make again is about the nature of having input on the transactions that are selected. And just to talk a little bit about my experience in a general way, you know, we teed up a number of transactions as I suggested before. They were all accepted, and then some. So the IRS looked at the company and said, hey, you know, we know that you have transactions with these other couple of countries that aren't involved in ICAP, right? Because it's limited to, you know, 20, 25 countries. Would you be okay, or would you be interested in having us look at those from a unilateral perspective and provide you with, you know, a risk assessment on those transactions? And we, you know, we were very eager to do that. And that was certainly something that was surprising for us.
I mean, your insights are super helpful in this regard, because it provides a perspective that, of course, I don't have. And some of what I'm going to say is going to tie up things I've already said, so I'll go through it rapidly. Challenges with respect to materiality, right? Different countries, different levels. The U.S. view on materiality is much higher in most instances than colleagues from other tax administrations. The adequacy of documentation, right? How deep do we need to go? There were a lot of debates on our team and with some of the other jurisdictions on, okay, so we're conducting a risk assessment, we're not conducting an audit. At what point do you feel like you're going too far with the amount of information that you're requesting? And it was less of a legal issue and more of a practical issue. Like, what are we doing here? Do we really need to go this far? Is it necessary to dig this deep? And so there was a lot of discussion around that. Varying views on the risk of different transactions. I mentioned that earlier. Intercompany financing was one area where there were lots of different views on the level of risk presented by certain transactions. Some of that discussion was surprising to me. The complexity of the transfer pricing issues. I think Eric's point about, you know, you have some, you know, agency and what comes into the program and which countries are involved. It's important to think that through, because if there's too much complexity, you just can't get it done in the 12 to 18 months. And it may be that that type of work might be more appropriate for an APA. And the final challenge is that there's just not sufficient certainty arising from the program for some participating taxpayers. And I think that's something that that presents a real question for taxpayers in terms of whether or not they want to participate.
Any last final thoughts, Eric or Doug, you want to share?
From my perspective, I think, you know, if you are a tax leader or transfer pricing leader and you are interested in getting tax certainty in an effective way, ICAP is a really important tool for you to consider. My experience with it was very positive.
And I double down on Eric's point on the importance of another tool on trying to resolve questions around transfer pricing risk.
Thanks, Brittany. This was really fun.
Thank you so much, Eric and Doug. This was wonderful. I think one of the major takeaways I've gotten from this is that ICAP is an excellent opportunity to seek out more certainty, and that it requires commitment to transparency, a leap of faith, but that there can be a lot of benefits on the other side if you choose to go down this route.